to this demonstration of ASP.NET Dynamic Data. My name is Jim O'Neill, and I'm a developer evangelist for Microsoft in the Northeast District, covering New England and upstate New York. I first presented this topic during our Northeast Roadshow series in the fall of 2008 to introduce folks to ASP.NET Dynamic Data, a technology made available with the Service Pack 1 release of Visual Studio 2008 and .NET Framework 3.5. For those of you that are PowerPoint averse, you'll be happy to hear I have only a few slides, and we'll spend most of our time looking at how to build dynamic, model-driven sites with this very cool technology. To boil down what ASP.NET Dynamic Data is, I offer this simple equation. With ASP.NET Dynamic Data, you start with the data model, which you see here on the left. The acronyms at the bottom are actually file extensions referring to the two primary data models supported today, the ADO.NET Entity Framework and Linked to SQL. The architecture is extensible, however, and other object relational models can be supported. LLBLGen is one that offers support today. The rather curious creature in the center is an Oryx, a member of the Antelope family. Oryx was the code name for ASP.NET Dynamic Data, so the image here represents the additional .NET assemblies that extend ASP.NET to offer this new feature. While it's tempting to try to attribute meaning to Oryx, after all, the O and the R could perhaps stand for object relational, you might have trouble coming up with something for the Y and the X. And indeed, I confirmed with the engineering team that in this case, the Oryx is just an Oryx. So putting the model and ASP.NET Dynamic Data together, what you get as output is a website with full CRUD, create, read, update, and delete capabilities, with absolutely no coding, at least for the out-of-the-box experience. This is similar to the scaffolding features offered by Ruby and third-party products like IronSpeed. However, ASP.NET Dynamic Data does not generate static pages that you then tweak and later have to regenerate if your data model changes. Rather, ASP.NET Dynamic Data uses the source data model to dynamically generate the pages and relies on page and control templates to drive the customization of the user experience. It's that customization process that we'll focus on next. For our demo, I'm going to create a simple ASP.NET Dynamic Data website from scratch. When creating a new website, I get three options relating to ASP.NET Dynamic Data. The first will create a site based on an entity framework data model. The second will build a site based on Linked to SQL, and the last one is a wizard that will lead you through the few steps that I'll just do manually. The wizard is itself part of the ASP.NET Dynamic Data Futures project that I'll talk about at the end of this presentation. In our case, I'm going to opt for the simpler Linked to SQL data model. You can think of Linked to SQL as a light version of the entity framework. Both are object relational modeling tools, but Linked to SQL supports only SQL Server, while the Entity Framework is an open technology supporting any ADO.NET provider that implements the required interfaces. Linked to SQL also performs a one-to-one mapping of database tables to classes or entities. The Entity Framework includes a conceptual model layer that enables you to model your entities independently from how they are stored, and it provides a storage schema that maps the conceptual model to the underlying data store. You may have heard recently that the emphasis on future functionality will be focused on the Entity Framework versus Linked to SQL. That's not to say Linked to SQL is obsolete, but rather that what it does today is pretty much going to be the extent of its implementation. And if that suffices for your business needs, then you should not hesitate to adopt it as part of your platform. Once I create the site, you'll notice a few recognizable elements of a typical ASP.NET website: a default ASPX page, a master page and CSS file, a configuration file, and the global ASAX file. There's also a dynamic data folder, which contains a few other folders alluding to page and control templates. We'll be delving into those in due time. Now, though, we'll need to fulfill the first part of the equation I presented on the opening slide: create the data model. We're going to use a Linked to SQL model, so I'll create that next. I'm going to use the somewhat dated but compact PubS database for this example, and select all of the tables. Notice that Linked to SQL infers the relationships among the tables to present an overview of the schema within a visual designer. If we look at the code that's generated for us by the Linked to SQL designer, we'll start to get a view into how ASP.NET Dynamic Data will be able to automatically generate the website pages. Here we can see that the authors table is mirrored by a class, with an attribute indicating the connection with the underlying table. A little further down, we can see that the properties of that class are associated with the fields of the authors table, and other attributes contain information on nullability, data type, and length. Keep in mind, though, that the code you see here is automatically generated via the designer. The entity framework has a similar scheme. The classes that are generated are partial classes, so we'll get a chance to do some customization in a moment, but you don't want to touch the implementation here, since as soon as you modify the model in the visual designer, your changes would be overwritten. So to keep myself honest, I'm just going to close the file now. Now that we have a model, we need to associate that model with our ASP.NET dynamic data site. I can do that via code that's added to my global ASAX file by the new project wizard. The metamodel class that's defined within this file contains the reference to your data model, and I simply make the association by uncommenting the provided line and specifying the data context for the link to SQL model. By default, this line also sets a property called scaffold all tables to false. The default value is a safeguard so you do not expose your entire model directly to ASP.NET dynamic data. For our simple demo, we'll set it to true. However, you'll likely want to make a determination entity by entity on what parts of the model to expose. You can use the scaffold table attribute directly on the classes that should be hidden to enforce your policy. With the modification to that single line of code, my site should now be operational. The behavior of the default page is to simply list the entities, here tables, in the data model and let you explore the contents of each. In your actual application, you would likely not provide such a generic entry page, so you can certainly modify or delete this page. In fact, I should mention that ASP.NET dynamic data is not an all-or-nothing proposition. While we created our site from scratch, you can apply ASP.NET dynamic data to an existing site. There's a few blog entries by the program manager, Scott Hunter, that lays out how to do this. I'll provide a link to his blog at the end of this session. Now from this default page, I can navigate to, say, the employees table, where I get a grid view layout of the data in that table, complete with paging and filtering. The filtering options are generated automatically by virtue of the fact that there are foreign key relationships between the employees table and two other tables in the database, jobs and publishers. Additionally, ASP.NET dynamic data has elected to show us a somewhat meaningful value for the filter, versus the integer ID value that is the actual data type of the IDs in the primary foreign key relationship. In this case, ASP.NET dynamic data opts to show you the first string in the related table. But if that's not the appropriate one, you can specify another attribute, again on the object class associated with the table, to override the default behavior. Notice too that the job and publisher columns are populated with links, so I can navigate to those relationships automatically as well. I also have edit, as well as delete and insert capability. The edit page takes me to an ASP.NET page with a details view control, allowing me to modify the data. Since this data was extracted via the link to SQL data model, the interface here has some knowledge of the underlying data types. Note the empID field is not editable, because it's the primary key of the table. And the two dropdowns are there because of the primary foreign key relationships we mentioned earlier. Let's try to modify the employees level. Notice that the value I entered is not an integer, which is the underlying database type, so a validation error was automatically thrown. This is ASP.NET dynamic data at work. It's able to determine the invalid input because of the model, and the infrastructure in the generated pages includes the ASP.NET validation controls you are likely already familiar with. As you can probably tell, you have a fully operational site by default, and it's probably enough for internal database maintenance, but the look is, well, a bit boring. Additionally, take a closer look at the employee page. Notice the column headers are just the actual database column names, not too user-friendly. And look at the hire date. It's a date, yet it's also showing a time value. It's doing that because the underlying database data type is a date time, and ASP.NET is just displaying the value based on that. It doesn't have any other information on the semantic context of that data. So as our first step in customizing this application, let's look at tweaking the underlying model to make it a little smarter in terms of understanding the meaning of the data. Earlier I mentioned we should never modify the model class generated for us by the link to SQL Designer. So instead we'll take advantage of the use of partial classes and extend the classes of interest in our own separate file. What I'd like to do in this file is modify the display of hire date to include only the date, and we'll also modify the column heading to be something a little more user-friendly. In order to make these modifications, I need to add attributes to the relevant properties of the employee class. The attributes I need to add are part of the system.componentModel and system.componentModel.dataAnnotations namespaces, so I'll first add the required import statements to my code. It's tempting to try to add the attributes directly in this partial class. However, that will not work, because you cannot add attributes to properties in partial classes if the property is already defined elsewhere. So what you do in ASP.NET dynamic data is create a sister metadata class, in which you can repeat the properties of interest and decorate them with the appropriate attributes. Next, I'll create the sister class. It really doesn't matter what I call it. In that class, I'll add whatever existing properties need to be decorated with attributes to affect the display in the resulting pages. Here is just the hire date field, so we'll add a property definition. You can actually just leave the data type as object, since this particular field of the sister class isn't really going to be accessed directly. It's only there to provide a place on which to hang the attributes. Now that I have a property defined, I can add the necessary attributes. To display a more user-friendly column header, I use the display name attribute. And to coerce the underlying date time value to just a date, I use the data type attribute. Note if there were fields within the employees table that I did not want to view, I could use the scaffold column attribute with the value set to false, and ASP.NET Dynamic Data would not generate that field as part of the user interface. Likewise, I could set the scaffold table attribute to false on the employee class itself, and you wouldn't be able to generate any interface for the table, nor would it appear on the default page for the site. Okay, so far so good. But you may be wondering, how do these changes to this arbitrary sister class get applied to my actual entity class? Well, it's through the use of yet another attribute, this one applied to the partial class's definition. Here, the metadata type attribute specifies the class that the entity should use to augment its understanding of the data model. Now let's rerun the site and see how it's changed. Notice we've modified the user interface here, and we haven't even touched an ASPX page. The model modification is carried throughout the application. You don't have to repeat yourself by addressing the display characteristics of that field everywhere it may be used on your site. ASP.NET Dynamic Data is ensuring that consistency for you. There's actually a host of other built-in attributes you can apply, and of course you can add your own. So I encourage you to consult the documentation to see what else you can do at just the model level. Okay, that's pretty powerful stuff, but my site still looks rather boring, and I certainly may not want every one of my pages looking like the other. Not a problem. What you are seeing here is the out-of-the-box experience, driven by default page templates. If you take a look at the dynamic data directory, you'll see 5 ASPX files. ASP.NET Dynamic Data uses these template files, along with the model information, to generate the user experience for listing, editing, and updating data. Within the page templates are a handful of new ASP.NET controls, like dynamic filter, dynamic control, and dynamic field, that are model smart controls enabling the templating feature. In addition, a linked data source object makes the connection among the model, data, and the UI controls on the page. You're free to make any changes you want in the template to do your own branding, or even rip out the default grid view and replace it with something else. Now, what if you want a significantly different look for your employee page, for instance, but you want to leave the user interface for the other pages just as it is? That's where custom templates come in. You can create a subdirectory under the Custom Pages folder in your site and modify the various CRUD pages for some or all of your entities. For instance, and as a trivial example, we can add a new list.aspx page for our employee entity that will provide an alternating row color. Of course, at this point, the entire page could be completely redesigned because it's applicable only to that entity. Let's give this new change a whirl by running the site again. Uh-oh, page not found error. It's kind of strange given that this is the page I just entered, and since the default behavior of Visual Studio is to launch the current page for you. That page is certainly there, so why the error? Well, this takes us on a slight tangent into the world of page routing. Notice the URL on the failed page. It refers directly to the underlying template file. Yet when I navigated to the entities from the default page, you saw URLs like localhost/employees/list.aspx. What's going on here is something you may have detected from our previous glimpse at the global ASAX file. ASP.NET Dynamic Data uses a new routing feature of ASP.NET, something that came about in the work for the ASP.NET Model View Controller, or MVC, project. With URL routing, the URL employees/list.aspx is actually intercepted and matched against a series of rules to determine what page should actually fulfill the request. The routing rules in ASP.NET Dynamic Data are such that it checks for the existence of templates first in the Custom Pages directory and then in the default templates directory. Note too that the Custom Pages directory has its own web.config file. If you were to open it up, you'd notice that it's set to generate the page not found error unconditionally. This is because you should be navigating to the pages in your dynamic data site via the routed URLs, not by directly accessing the templates. To prevent this type of error as you're developing your ASP.NET dynamic data site, I'd recommend you modify your project settings to always start with the default page. Okay, now that we understand why we got the 404 error, let's navigate to our modified customer page the right way and note that the change applies only to that entity and not to the others. Now that we know how to customize pages for our entities, let's dive a step deeper and modify how an individual data field is displayed. The concept of templates is carried out at this level too, and you can see that there's a field templates directory here. Most of the templates have a name that connotes a data type, and that's exactly how the template is correlated to a given entity's property. The foreign key and children templates actually work in the same way to provide the links and dropdowns to items that have relationships to the currently displayed entity. If you look at the implementation of a field template, like boolean.ascx, you can see it's a simple ASP.NET user control, but with a slight twist. It extends the new field template user control class in the new dynamic data namespace. Field template user control itself extends the familiar system.web.ui.userControl by adding additional functionality that gives it access to the underlying data model driving the ASP.NET dynamic data website. Notice too that there are variants of these controls. There's a Boolean ASCX and a Boolean Edit ASCX, and there could even be a Boolean Insert ASCX. These overloaded versions of the control are used in specific modes on the various pages. So if you were presented a read-only view of data including Boolean fields, the Boolean.ascx control would be used. But if you went to edit a record containing a Boolean field, the Boolean Edit version would be used. In many cases, the only difference may be that the edit version of the control is enabled, and the read-only version is not. That's definitely the case for the Boolean field template. In our sample site, the authors table uses a Boolean field to display whether or not a particular author is on contract. The default experience is a checkbox, disabled in the list view and enabled if we go to edit a specific author. Let's say that we want a different experience for editing, and we'd like to see two radio buttons with more meaningful labels in lieu of a checkbox. Well, to do so, we can create a new edit style. Let's call it BooleanButton_edit.ascx and copy the existing implementation in. I'm going to transform the existing checkbox into a radio button list with the false or zero option labeled free agent and the true or one option labeled on contract. Note, here we are hard coding the radio button text, so our reusability of this edit style is pretty low. Given, though, that the field template user control has access to the entire data model, it would easily be possible to drive the labels from another entity in our model, thereby providing a new user control that could be used for potentially any Boolean-valued field. To reflect the change in the underlying control type, I also need to make a few modifications to the code behind. Now that I have my new user control crafted, I need to tell the model that it should use this control versus the one it would default to, namely Boolean Edit. To do so, we revisit the model via our partial class definition. Here I want to decorate the contract property of the author entity, so I need to follow the same steps as we did earlier when modifying the hire date property of the employee entity. Here I've repeated the author class and provided it a sister class. Remember, the link is made via the metadata type attribute. In the metadata class, I've decorated the contract field with an attribute called UIHint and provided it the name of the template that should be used. With this information, the edit experience should now reflect the new UI, while the view experience should be unchanged. Let's try it out. While the aesthetics aren't great here, I think you get the idea of how you can really customize and spruce up the look and feel of your site. Perhaps by leveraging existing controls from third-party vendors, bringing in some Ajax extenders, and so on. There really isn't much limiting you from providing a custom polished experience for the user. And you get the benefit of the uniform application of the UI across the entire site. So far, we've been focused on how you can customize the look and feel of your site, but we haven't talked much about another aspect of CRUD, namely data validation. We saw a little bit of the built-in validation in play earlier on when I attempted to update an integer field with an alphabetic character, but you may have more complex scenarios. ASP.NET Dynamic Data has you covered there as well at a variety of levels. I'm going to move back to the slides now to chat briefly on this. There are essentially two types of validation options in ASP.NET Dynamic Data, attribute-based and algorithmic. There are several attributes built in to handle things like ranges and matching regular expressions, but you can build your own as well by extending the validation attribute class. Doing so is pretty straightforward. You need only implement the Boolean isValid method, in the body of which you can provide whatever logic is needed to perform the validation. The value to be checked is passed in as a parameter. You can also provide a custom error message implementation if you wish. Once you've done so, you can now decorate the appropriate properties of your entities with your new attribute, and ASP.NET Dynamic Data will take care of the rest. One of the drawbacks of attribute-based validation is that it's not dynamic. It's appropriate for constraining options to a range or a subset, but that range or subset needs to be explicit at compilation time. For more sophisticated validation, including validation that requires cross-referencing other property values, you'll need to write some code. Link to SQL includes a number of plug-in points in which you can add such validation. By using partial methods, these extension points are available to you, but if you don't use them, they're not included in the resulting executable image. In other words, there's no code bloat, since no IL is generated unless you implement the given partial method in your own class. For linked to SQL models, you'll get a couple of opportunities to do validation via partial methods. The onChanging methods allow you to validate the value of the existing property before it's assigned to the entity. Likewise, the onChanged methods provide the opportunity to do post-processing on an updated property. These options are only appropriate when you need to validate just the given property. When you require cross-validation, you would need to provide an implementation for the onValidate method, which gives you access to all of the updates made to the entity. Or you could opt for implementing methods on the data context itself if you want to differentiate validation actions based on the requested operation, namely update, insert, or delete. For the entity framework, there aren't quite as many entry points, and you'll need to rely on the saving changes event for validation beyond a single field's value. You can check out the documentation on MSDN for numerous code examples on how to set up these various levels of validation. Now that you've had a taste of ASP.NET Dynamic Data, let's look at where this technology is headed. First of all, third-party support for ASP.NET Dynamic Data is available now. We mentioned LLBLGen as an alternative model technology earlier, and many of the third-party component packages, like those from Infragistics, Telerik, and Peter Bloom, have or will have direct support for the Field Template User Control class that enables the model-driven custom controls of ASP.NET Dynamic Data. On the Microsoft front, you definitely want to check out the ASP.NET Dynamic Data Futures site on ASP.NET/dynamic-data. There are a host of features being developed that you can actually integrate today, many of which may make their way into the product proper in future versions. There's even being work done to create a version of ASP.NET Dynamic Data that will work with the MVC framework, currently being developed as an alternative to ASP.NET Web Forms. For more information on ASP.NET Dynamic Data, and to get ideas on how to apply concepts like authorization and internationalization, there are a number of great resources out there. The main one is, of course, the ASP.NET/dynamic-data site, which provides some how-to videos and also gives you direct access to the user forums. In terms of blogs, both the engineering team and key members of the community have been active in working with the technology and helping develop techniques and best practices for customizing and extending sites built with ASP.NET Dynamic Data. And with that, we've reached the end of this session. I'd like to thank you for tuning in and encourage you to try out ASP.NET Dynamic Data. As you can see, it's quite easy to be quickly up and running. Enjoy the rest of your day.